Welcome. I mean, welcome to the Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Tuesday, 3 p.m., as always. I'd like to introduce my two lovely guests, Natalie Smith from Global Table. Globaltable.com. It's a wonderful houseware store in the West Village, Soho West Village.
Soho.
Yeah. So, and Eugenia Bone, her friend and amazing author, recently of Well Preserved by Clarkson Potter. We're going to dive right into it. We're gonna start talking about beautiful housewares. Natalie started in the fashion industry, actually. Was it Glamour Magazine, LWWD? Mm-hmm. What is that? Women's Wear Daily?
Yes.
Model Magazine.
Model. Yeah. Uh-oh, poking fun.
So mean.
Should have brought her. Gotta watch out. We should have a mute button. Watch out for this one.
Exactly.
And from there, prop styling within the magazines?
Yeah, it was mostly a fashion stylist doing clothing and things like that. But the reason I got into the business was because fashion sort of chews you up and spits you out pretty quickly. And all the editors, including myself, were bringing ceramics back from Paris that you couldn't get in the city. And I thought, God, you know, all these people who are very stylish are bringing all this beautiful ceramic stuff back from Paris and complaining because their luggage was so heavy.
Oh, So it was one of those covetless kind of conundrums.
So I thought, okay, well, maybe I should, you know, open a store once fashion had chewed me up and spit me out. And it was because I really, being an English major, you're not really equipped to do anything else.
Funny enough, Natalie and Eugenia met years ago at Barnard. And it wasn't until walking into your store years later that you guys reconnected. And Eugenia's book, Well Preserved, featured a lot of Natalie's housewares, very well curated housewares at that.
And Eugenia is the recipient of anything that's chipped that nobody else
wants. I know,
wants.
I've got the deal of a lifetime. Yeah. When I feel a little depressed, I wander in and see what's chipped.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that too. You watch out, you got competition now.
You're going to have a sad face, you know, you can really pull our heartstrings.
Yeah, Eugenia actually writes a blog for the Denver Post. She lives both New York and Denver about, well, things.
Yeah, it's a preserving blog, so since my idea is that preserving happens all year round, the blog is develops recipes or publishes recipes that I've developed for preserving stuff that's in season year round. So every week there's new preserving recipes to the extent that I can handle it. You know, I'll also do the spin-off recipes from the preserves because I'm also very interested in not just preserving for the sake of preserving, but preserving as a way to kind of actuate a meal down the road, you know, so that you have the convenience and also, you know, support your local economy throughout the year, not just the harvest, stuff like that.
Actually, you gave me a wonderful segue to thank our sponsors, which I forgot to say at the top of the show, which is Acme Smoked Fish, located in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. They've been a mainstay here for over 55 years, using old world recipes, producing some of the finest smoked fish, whitefish, salmon, sable for discerning palates. For more information, where to find Acme, Blue Hill Bay, or Ruby Bay products, visit acmesmokedfish.com. Local, sustainable, preserved. Really hard to get great stuff from because they're only open Fridays, actually, from 8 to 1.
Oh, and there's
there's a line around the corner for that kind of stuff. But back to your idea of preserve local, it's mainly local idea, right?
Well, when you preserve, you want to preserve stuff that's in pristine condition. So you're going to use what's in season and at the peak of their ripeness. If you, what you put in the jar is what you get out. So if you put some crappy apple stuff, you know, because it's rotting in your fridge, and say, okay, preserving is a way that I can avoid my guilt, that's just bogus. You're going to open the jar and it's going to be still rotty apple.
I think that's a funny thing. A lot of people think of preserving as a way of not throwing something out rather than using it at the peak.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. So when I did my book, which was mostly photographed and styled by this lady, Megan Fawn Schlo, who's really talented, and she found out that Natalie was a friend and was willing to lend us some stuff, she got really excited because not everybody gets to borrow things from Natalie's store. And part of the whole idea with using the kind of stuff that's in Natalie's store was we were trying to produce a canning book that broke down the old paradigm, the like checkered tablecloth and all the little cute ribbons. And, you know, it's just, that's just not me, and it's not what I thought modern canners were about. So we used these very modern, sophisticated dishes that would be more typical of a household, of a city household, and actually than a kind of idealized country kitchen in, you know, the Midwest somewhere. I mean, not to be disparaging to the Midwest or anything, but, you know, it was a kind of paradigm change, at least in our sort of minds. And Natalie's stuff kind of helped deliver that.
Yeah, and Natalie's wares kind of sing of this very refined, but at the same time, very handcrafted sense. It's not like you have the upper echelons of, you know, fine china that's golden crusted, right, necessary. It's beautiful stuff inspired organically. Yeah, it's sophisticated, but inspired by nature.
But it should be
nature.
Usable, and that's the whole idea. Yeah. That it's not something that you're going to pull out for a special occasion. I mean, every meal should be a special occasion, and, you know, especially when Eugenia is cooking for you.
Yeah.
you want to use it every day.
See, my nickname is Gina, and that's why she's doing the whole Eugenia thing, which she's probably going to do for the duration of this.
Yeah.
And at lunch afterwards.
Well, you mentioned Model Magazine,
right,
so I had to get you back.
Yeah. Oh, for goodness sake.
I'm glad I'm providing you a forum to have fun with each other. But back to your wares. I mean, some of the specific ones that you've mentioned to me, Allison Evans, AEceramics.com, which was really beautiful, like handcrafted and kind of inspired by the sea, some repurposed materials. Dana Broadwin from
Brandwine
from DBO Home, also inspired by the sea, from Maine.
She's sort of a little more mountain inspired and field inspired, inland. But she embosses her ceramics with, like, she'll take a frond from a pine tree or something and just impress it into the clay and then glaze it. So you have this beautiful impression on a beautiful plate of something that's, you know, completely natural. So.
But I mean, it's so nice to see that these things are so naturalistic, that they're not otherworldly, that they're not like these weird conventions of, you know, product of, you know, these supply chains making the same dish for Target over and over and over.
But you
there's
know.
So much personality to each piece.
How often do you say the Crate and Barrel industrial spies
come
to your store?
They do. They come in all the time, and they source things. And Target actually did that. And, you know, and then suddenly, you know, a year later, you'll see what I've had in the store sort of knocked off for, you know, a fraction of the price.
What are, like, a couple of those names that you've seen then replicated?
There was there's a wonderful ceramic studio in Australia called Mud Australia, and Urban Outfitters, you know, bought some of their pieces and basically sent them to China and said, here, copy this. And they were sold in Urban Outfitters stores everywhere for nothing.
Where's the soul of that? It's all about that connection, you know, to the actual artist.
And also, you know, each piece is sort of, you can see the individuality of it, because it's handmade and it's sort of wonky.
Speaking of a true individual, Ofer T.
Yes, she is too. She sort of has these beautiful platters that she embosses with, like, flowers. So it's sort of almost like a surprise when the food is gone. You have this image sort of to look at. And same thing, you know, they're all handmade and beautiful.
Yeah,
so.
And aside from Eugenia's book, a lot of your products end up in magazines and books. Who are some of your more recent clients?
Well, Food and Wine comes in all the time. I mean, Oprah Magazine, basically any food magazine, Saveur, we did a lot of stuff with, pretty much every magazine that does anything with home or food has been into the store and borrows. I mean, literally every week a stylist comes in and wants to buy or borrow ceramics for a photo shoot.
So how well curated is your home, is your armoire?
Well, I have a lot of chip plates too.
But I got to tell you, I've been in her home for dinner and whatnot. And Natalie could be an interior designer if she could tolerate clients. Because her house is so unusual and so eclectic. You know, my 15-year-old son, Mo, he's like, oh, it's so awesome in here. Just because she does stuff that is kind of ballsy, that other people don't do with their houses or don't even think that way. And none of it is, like, high-priced or feels precious. It actually just feels kind of beautiful and kooky.
Yeah. Can you cite some more specific examples of certain pieces?
Like wallpaper is really...
Yeah, we do wall. I love wallpaper, but most of the things I have in my house are things that I've accumulated over years. Some things that I've found on the street, and it's sort of a nice mix, and so it feels maybe a little more individual.
Yeah. So when you made the transition from fashion into, do you consider it housewares? What do you consider your shop?
Home accessories.
Home accessories.
And tabletop.
What were your first lines that you carried?
This French line from China called Compagnie de l'Orient et de la Chine from Paris, which was not available here, and I started bringing it in, and that was sort of the cornerstone. And then my aesthetic is sort of minimal, so I was attracted to a lot of Japanese ceramic artists, and so when I first opened the store, it was pretty minimal in the store. There wasn't a lot there.
And you've always been on, is it Sullivan Street?
Yeah, for almost 15 years now.
What address? 97?
It's 107.
107. Sullivan. I knew there was a 7. I go to her store so often for people's wedding special occasions.
Oh, yeah.
I almost shouldn't be admitting this, but a lot of you have those glass-blown vases, friends of mine. Well, who made those?
There are lots of different ones from the
club. Those multicolored little glass-blown vases, pouring
Sugihara?
Pictures.
Oh, maybe those might be from Holland.
Yeah, I don't know if you have many more because I bought all of them.
That's all. It's your fault. You've worn down the stock.
Yeah.
But there's so much stuff in there now. It used to be very spare, but over 15 years, I've accumulated lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And lots of resources. So.
And of Natalie's 15-year run, Eugenia, when did you first come into the store and see that she had this inspired collection of home accessories?
God, I can't remember. Maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah, maybe
something like that.
Yeah,
and I started buying same thing, weddings and stuff like that, and then for myself.
Yeah,
I bought a lot of stuff for myself, but I have weird things. Like I've got the iron antler candlesticks.
Yeah,
very
that's
sexy.
Awesome.
Very
yeah.
nice.
Who made those?
Well, those are from Roost.
They're
super cool.
They do the same etch glass little.
Yeah,
I bought those for too many people and don't have any myself.
Those are great.
And then I went through a big, water carafe, but the kind you keep beside your bed with the little
with the top.
Glass mm-hmm. on top.
Kind of like what Jonathan Alder is trying to do right now.
Yeah,
cap the well.
Yeah,
but I bought those for people for a long time because it was reasonable. To be honest with you, for considering like the Madison Avenue type of quality in Natalie's shop, even though it's more, sort of hip than Madison Avenue, but the prices are definitely. Natalie, you could be a little bit higher.
It's true. It's kind of absurd.
It's kind of
how
a really
affordable.
Well-priced stuff.
Yeah. So, you end up going there, buying something for your friend, but you always end up with a little something for yourself.
Yeah.
Well.
There's
That's
all
good.
These little cups of, little things that are right on our desk when you're paying up.
Oh, yeah.
And, boy, you can start, flipping those in the bag.
Oh, yeah. It's like all the candy and magazines when you're...
Yeah. Yeah, it's like buying...
Impulse buys.
Spices at...
Except I end up with a ton of demi-tasse spoons or things made with mother of pearl.
But those things you use, you're looking for something at the last minute and you open your drawer and you're like, wow, there it is. I need that right now.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back and talk more of those little impulse buys, covet lists, and Eugenia's and Natalie's collaboration. What, where's they actually used and well preserved and where everybody's going in the future. Okay, Michael Harlan Turkell, this is The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Food Scene, S-E-E-N. I haven't figured out how to inflect it, just saying S-E-E-N rather than S-E-E. S-C-E-N-E. And I couldn't visualize that for a second. On Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Natalie Smith from GlobalTable.com and Eugenia Bone. Your blog is blogs.denverpost.preserved.com/preserved.
It's Well Preserved Colorado is what the Post calls it.
You know, excellent.
Like on their website.
Not only a collection of writings, recipes, but also a collection of photos and indos using a lot of Natalie's, you're saying chipped and, you know.
I just turn the chip part away.
Yeah, discounted.
But I don't even. I don't really care. And I don't think anyone else does either.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They're such works of art. They're so personal that it's not like you're getting something. Well, you get worried if something does chip a little too much because they almost feel irreplaceable. But what are some of the most recent products that you've been using in some of your photographs?
I have these wonderful little pictures that are kind of triangular shaped with a little round.
Those are great. Yeah, they're from Spain or Portugal, actually, from Pordenza, and they're just very modern sort of pointy pictures and things, and those are great for serving sauces and things
exactly,
like that, and
they
look good in photographs.
And then I have been really using a lot this white platter with a very small chip in the corner. That's got gray. It's a square platter. It's a kind of fantastic size. You know, I have to say, the thing that I use of Natalie's every day is some of her absolute cheapest stuff, and it's this plastic. And I have a pasta bowl. I bought almost all of them in the store I've given them away because, I grew up with an Italian father eating pasta. Pasta was always served served at the table in a low bowl.
Yeah.
A low wide bowl, also salad. And it was always hard to find them. You know, there was just a weird design thing that wasn't happening usually. Natalie had the perfect pasta bowls where, they look beautiful, they hold the heat well, but they're nice and shallow so you can get at everything.
Yes, those were discontinued, sadly.
We
have to find a replacement for those.
Yeah.
I mean, that's funny thing that you bring up is that with your Italian heritage, that you're looking for almost Italian-inspired dishes. Do you find either of you find yourself serving, Spanish food in, the Spanish dishes, or Mediterranean in tagines?
I don't actually. I feel that any food can be beautiful on any plate, really. I'm not a traditionalist that way, and I don't think you are either.
No, but I'm like, my husband likes to have a glass of wine at the at dinner in a water glass.
Yeah.
And okay, so maybe he's going to go out and pick grapes in the vineyard later, but not me. I like to have it in a really nice glass. Yeah. I think wine tastes better
in a pretty glass
and
a nice glass.
Yeah. I do. And in fact, Natalie has these champagne glasses that I buy for like kind of special gifts. I guess weddings would count, but now I'm
the etched ones that you like.
I'm kind of out of the wedding stage.
Yeah, the tall, skinny champagne glasses.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah. They're fantastic.
And I've gotten emails back. I have one. My editor actually of Well Preserved, Pam Krauss. She emailed me back and she said, "You give good gift," which I was like, "Yes." And and then Natalie was wonderful because she said, and they always break. So you can, people always
glasses
need...
are always a good present because people always need more glasses because they always break.
Yeah.
So that's a good present for people.
And they're reasonable and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So
funny enough, my girlfriend's going, we're going to her best friend's wedding. She's maid of honor. And for the shower bachelorette party, brought up one of your large wooden bowls.
Oh, really?
About yay high.
Teak.
Teak bowls.
And those are great. I have one of those.
They're absolutely fantastic. And then going in that store and seeing everything inspired by, nature and, organically produced. And I don't mean organic in the sense,
one of those shoes that
Toms or
Earth shoes.
Not in the Earth shoe sense.
In the sense that you actually
granola sense.
You see a true soul or a true handicraft.
But those are good also because they come from sustainable forests, so it's you're sort of doing a good thing rather than raping the earth. You have a beautiful bowl that it's made of teak and it'll last forever. That's what boats are made out of. But it's also from a sustainable forest.
Then how do you source these things? Are you looking for those kind of dynamics? Are you looking for sustainable, local? Well, definitely not local if you're
local. There aren't very many ceramic artists in Manhattan, although Judy Jackson is one, and she has a studio in New York, and she's great. She does beautiful vases and bowls. Basically what I look for is beautiful shapes, beautiful materials that are not, $1,000 a bowl or something like that. And that, it's hard to find, actually.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, what are some of the hotter materials? I think everyone's into bamboo right now still.
Bamboo is good. You know, for building bamboo is good. But bamboo is you know, problematic because it has to be spun in order to make it into a bowl. And sometimes they peel away. So, you know, the best thing is like a solid block of wood if you're going to buy a salad bowl because it's not going to chip or, you know, or peel off or whatever. So,
you know, and it's interesting to see a lot of restaurants kind of repurpose materials around the cities, you know, have wood forged from even another restaurant. And is that a growing trend in the housewares, home accessories?
Yeah, repurpose materials, you know, recycled glass is hot. And
And
well, it is in architecture too.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Chelsea Market in Manhattan is a great example of repurposing, and it's, you know, chic. Everybody loves this facility. It looks contemporary.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's very in line and in tone with the kind of things that you carry. Who are some of the producers that you have that have repurposed materials at the moment or that recycled glass?
There's the, for wood, there's a company out of San Francisco called Bahari, which they do a lot of repurposed stuff and sustainable forest woods. Glasses, there's a funny little company I found up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, that does these beautiful sort of swirled glass bowls out of recycled glass. And, you know, they're just, they're not that many that do really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's kind of schlocky and awful and sort of, you know, super crafty, which I don't go for.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, it's getting, as people are becoming more conscious of, you know, repurposing things, you know, given what's happening to the world right now, it's becoming easier to find things. So.
Yeah. So the majority of the stuff is like the handmade clay, you know, purpose for an original reason. You know what I find interesting? You said that there are not that many people in New York really doing beautiful ceramics or even ceramics and that kind of stuff at all.
Well, I'm sure everyone in Brooklyn will be very angry.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm talking about Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, even in Manhattan, there are a couple here, and they're starting to, you know, grow into their own, starting to burgeon.
Yeah.
And, I had actually written a story for Edible Manhattan about John O. Pandolfi, who does a couple interesting pieces for the Danny Myers restaurants, 11 Madison Park, the Modern. There's Perch out in Red Hook, I believe, too. Mm-hmm. But why do you think there isn't, you know, with the handicrafts movement and artisan movement, why there aren't more people looking to make home accessories and housewares?
Well, I think in New York, it's, you know, very difficult to find, you know, affordable studio space. And you need a big space if you're going to do that kind of stuff. So a lot of people, I mean, there was a beautiful ceramic artist in Brooklyn, Teresa Chang. She moved to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And now she has this, like, you know, whole building sort of devoted to it. And, you know, she grew up and had kids and, you know, wanted more space. So I think that's what happens. Although my cousin who went to Oberlin, now she started a printing, a silk screening facility out in Bushwick.
Yeah.
And
what's that, what's it called?
You know, I can't remember off the top of my head, of course.
Oh, well, add that one in.
Well, sorry, Jolie.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she's got, she's doing these beautiful arrows that she makes that are for sale in, at Partners in Spade in New York. And she's, you know, they're doing it in Bushwick. So people are going further and further out, you know, of the boroughs.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when you guys walk into restaurants and you see a plate in front of you, a glass, do you flip it over, see who's producing it? Or you kind of already know it's, like, one of a few, you know? It's FOH, or it's Pile of Wee, or it's, you know...
Yeah, I mean, you can usually tell, but, you know, all that stuff is great, too. I mean, I sell a lot of that stuff to restaurants and to people, but, you know, it's not all just handcrafted. It's, you know, you need some of that stuff, too, for every day. But
What restaurants do you sell to?
Boca Ria has bought a lot of stuff over there. There's hotels too. The Thompson bought a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The Mercer Hotel I did a lot of business with. God, just over the years, tons of them. A lot of them have closed now, unfortunately, but they open and close. But yeah, they all come in. Jean Georges comes in. I mean, you know, they're all passing through to look at stuff.
Are they looking for a line to supply the whole restaurant, or more VIP on those bouches?
A lot of it's accent pieces, like La Grenouille bought beautiful vases, and Charles Masson comes in all the time and buys things for himself and plates for the restaurant as well.
Yeah. Oh, so, like I said before, it's hard to get in there and not buy stuff for yourself, even if you're shopping for someone else.
Yeah.
what are you looking for now? I mean, are you looking for any new specific kinds of pieces, new trends, new materials?
I don't really do trends. Basically, yeah. The whole
you make trends.
I feel yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. No.
You know, when you see those Crate and Barrel people.
Yeah.
What you know? What else? Well,
but basically, that's what I feel like. I'm a curator. I mean, I just go out there and a lot of people come to me now that I've been established for so long, and if it's something that I would have in my house, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's basically very personal, which is, I think, why a lot of people respond to it, because it's not just sort of cookie cutter. It's it's somebody's personal idea of what looks good.
Yeah. And what is your favorite overall piece in your home? Not that you have to pick a number one favorite, but what gets most often displayed, used? And you, Jenny, you could chime in too, if you've been to her house and seen a couple things.
But actually, I have these crappy tin plates that I've had that nobody wanted to buy that I had, you know, I have like 40 of that we use.
Yeah.
Out in Long Island.
I don't like them.
You don't like those?
No. I know I never said anything to you about it before.
They're so great, though.
But so might as well wait until they're on air. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the food gets cold on them.
Oh. Okay. Well, next time we live very close to each other out in Long Island, and we have little food parties now. We had a pizza party that was pretty rocking the other day.
Oh, yeah. That was wild. I had never been to a real pizza party, you know, like that. I'd heard. But that was, now I know what the hubbub is about.
Where did you guys go?
We made it at
home. Oh, at your house? Yeah.
We made pizza. My husband's Southern Italian via America, and he's into cooking and pizza. And so these guys came over, and we drank a lot of wine and made pizzas.
Out of beautiful glasses and off fantastic
Actually, I don't think we even...
No, it was on the tin plates.
No.
We didn't even use tin plates.
The pizza didn't even...
Sliding them over on the counter. Yeah.
The pizza did not make it to a plate. They were just on
in
the
fact,
board.
We
and
didn't
we
even sit down.
Yeah.
No, just
we didn't
standing up.
We were
standing. I mean, it was... uncivilized and really divine.
Yeah, it's a funny point that you bring up, actually, talking about not just the aesthetics, but, the temperature control of a plate and stuff. I mean, when you research these products, do you get to actually do R&D, get to bring them in and, like, eat off of them first, or do you just put them on the shelves properly?
No, it's usually the other way around. I put them out, and then, I'll test drive them if one's chipped and I end up with it at home. But, that's how I test drive things when they end up at my house, but I've test driven pretty much everything, so I can sort of chime in to anybody who has a question, and people have a lot of questions about what is sold and what they're gonna have on their table,
and I only hope more people come in and have questions. I just wanted to thank the two of you for being on the show. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, thank you for having us.
Natalie Smith of globaltable.com. Home accessories galore. I mean, and get ready, even if you're going in there to buy something for somebody, that you're going to take something home yourself. Eugenia Bone, thank you so much. Author, Well Preserved. Your blog again, blogs.denverpost.com/preserved. You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. My name is Michael Harlan Turkel. Thanks again to our sponsor, Acme Smoke Fish. That's acmesmokefish.com. I'd like to thank Jack Inslee, our producer, Nat Wiener, our engineer, and tune in next Tuesday at 3. I'm going to start writing down my covet list. I'll be stopping by soon.
Get
those roost glasses
face.
Are mine.
Please
do.
Dude, thank you again.
Thank you.